Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Carter Augustine, the team reporter for Sporting Kansas City. Carter, as we ask you every time that we talk, how's the bubble and how much longer till the next thunderstorm rolls through?
You know, it looks like clear skies right now. So it's been so frustrating. It seems every time we get a day off, it's the rainiest days. So like,
no.
fingers crossed. We had training this morning. And hopefully we get a nice day here rolling in, but bubble life is good. We had a sushi dinner the other night. So that was the highlight for me. I know a lot of guys, and girls on staff, not the biggest sushi fans, but myself, I was loving it.
That kind of surprises me a little bit. I don't know why. I have no reason to think otherwise, but I find that as a bit of a shock. I'm with you. I love sushi.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, it's certainly been a wave the last 5 or 10 years, and it surprises me too that some people aren't riding the wave yet. But yeah, our team at admin, Katie, she sat next to me and she was not enjoying the sushi that I was eating in her face.
Oh, it's too bad, but sounds like otherwise it was good to get out. But Carter, I want to start with Sporting's big morning win over Real Salt Lake Wednesday. What was the atmosphere like around the team following that game?
I think they were overjoyed with the really tough first game and then with two big-time Western Conference victories. And you look at especially the way they defended in that game against RSL, I think they were really, really happy with how they did that as a team. RSL actually had a lot of the ball there for the last 20 minutes of the first half, but they were unable to really create any big chances. So I think Sporting knows they could have played a little better, but in the end, they really limited any big chances from happening for RSL, and they were very happy with that.
Manager Peter Vermees did talk a lot about those final 20 minutes of the first half and being very pleased with how the team responded, but the defense looked a lot different. There was Roberto Puncic alongside Graham Smith, and they were still able to get that done even with the absence of captain Matt Beisler. When you look at all of the lineup changes and how the team was still able to pull out such a dominating win, what does that tell you about the depth of this team?
Yeah, I talked to Graham Smith after the game, and he pointed out, hey, it's not just the 11 starters, the kind of consistent starters that are working hard. He feels that they're really deep this year and that the whole team has been putting in quite the effort, not only here in Orlando, but the months leading up to it during the coronavirus break, and obviously in preseason and how well the team started the year. But you look at, like you said, a couple of new guys into the starting lineup. I think Graham Smith didn't put a foot wrong in the first half. I mean, he came in a big spot here for Matt Beisler, and I think he was 32 of 32 passing in the first half, led the team in clearances. He was fantastic, and he continued that throughout the game. And then, you know, Gianluca Busio had some good moments, whipped in the corner that led to the first goal. And what really stood out to me was the people that came in as substitutes. Every one of them made an impact when they came on the field. And actually, Peter Vermees said that in a team meeting this week after the game, that he was really happy to see that from the guys that came into the game. When you look at Felipe Hernandez, he was all over the pitch. That was such a great cameo from him. But not only him, Daniel Shallowy immediately onto the game into a slide tackle. I think some of his teammates were saying, hey, that's the first time we've seen you get stuck in like that, giving him a little grief. But he won a header that wound up being really crucial. Amadou Dia came in. Gerso obviously was an instant impact. And so I think everyone that came in as a sub made a difference. And that was a big reason why they were able to hold on and get the result, the 3 points.
How did you see that, what we saw on the field with such a great impact from the new starters, the substitutes, how do you see that maybe changing the way that Peter Vermees goes about his lineup moving forward? Will we see more movement, or do you think he'll go back to what we saw in the Minnesota and even Colorado game where it was more of a you know, single lineup with a couple of changes?
I think he likes his starters, right? And I think it's tough for, and this is what Graham Smith said, it's tough to get into the lineup when you have the starters playing so well for most of the season. But if you get a substitute opportunity like some of these guys did and you play this well, you're going to have to right? It's human nature. It's going to be forcing Peter Vermees a little bit more. And for me, I think the ones that stick out in that regard are Graham Smith and Felipe Hernandez. They're, I think, really maybe getting into Peter Vermees' mind a little bit more. Felipe Hernandez, I think especially that type of midfielder is – it's what Roger Espinoza is, right? He covers every blade of grass and adds a little bit of bite, covering so much ground. It's something that they didn't, with Felipe Gutierrez out for the year, they don't really have that other guy besides Roger Espinoza. And now Felipe Hernandez has come in and I think maybe given some comfort in the coaching staff mind that, hey, we got a guy we can rely on him now.
And Carter, we talked to Felipe last year on the Sporting KC show, and I just remember walking away from that interview thinking, what a mature and just put together individual. I mean, you just forget sometimes that these men, these professional athletes, are so young and so early in their careers. And I just think that Felipe Hernandez is a perfect example. Was so happy to see him be so successful on the pitch there on Wednesday. But you bring up the starters and how hard it is for some other players on the team to really break into the starting lineup, two of those being forwards, Kyrie Shelton and Alan Pulido. As we know, two huge offseason acquisitions for the club and both of them just really dominating the stat sheet right now. And I mean, what was the one I saw? They are the only players in Major League Soccer with at least 3 goals, 5 chances created, and 30 duels won. I mean, when you look at, we knew that Alan Pulido was going to be a big impact player with this team, but when you look at what the two of them together have been able to do, how much does that allow Sporting to be more of the team that they were trying to be last year and they just couldn't seem to make it work? Granted, injuries and other factors, but when you look at the impact that those two specifically have had, how has it really taken the team to that next level?
Yeah, I think both of them offer so much, and they offer some different things as well. We've seen in this tournament, especially Kyrie Shelton, that's a great out ball. If the back line's in trouble and the defense is pushed up the pitch, they know that, hey, we've got a guy that can flat out run, first of all. And second, he's so strong and big, he's just a handful for any defender trying to mark him. So I think we've seen him get in behind, obviously in the Colorado Rapids game. That was the biggest moment in the game when he was brought down by Danny Wilson after a really well-timed run in behind the back line. And you've talked about it, Allie, that he looks so much more confident now in his second stint in Sporting KC. Maybe less deferential in front of goal. He's looking to score a little bit more. He wants the ball. He told me he's happy that Alan Pulido's taking penalties, but he wants to take them himself because he's got all the confidence. And you love to hear that from Kyrie Shelton. And then Alan Pulido, I don't know how, but he's exceeded expectations. I mean, you see what he's doing in terms of assists and goals, but he's just a complete forward. And it's another thing. The players know that they can zip it into him, and he's going to hold the ball up, either drawing a foul or the ability to play with his back to goal and play in players behind like Kyrie Shelton. He works so hard for the team. I mean, he's played 90 plus minutes in all 3 of these games down here in Orlando, and he's leading the line. You know, we say it all the time, the tip of the spear in this Peter Vermees 4-3-3. He starts the pressure, and I think he has been exactly what Peter Vermees wanted in a number 9.
He's been so fun to watch, and it's always great when a club makes that investment, which is kind of a risk from time to time. You look at Chicharito and the LA Galaxy not being able to reach the new heights that they thought they would in adding him to the team. But then you look at a team like Sporting, and it seems like they could not have scouted this any better. And Pulido's just really made an impact early on, even wearing the captain's band in that game on Wednesday, which was really cool to see. But Carter, now we move on to the knockout round. It's win or go home. How has that changed the vibe around the hotels and in the bubble now that teams are being eliminated and out of the tournament?
It's been interesting, Allie. I had a kind of awkward silent elevator ride with Chris Armas the other night after they were knocked out, the Red Bulls. So he was cordial. He gave me a nice head nod, but I could, you know, you could tell that there's some thoughts going through his brain. We're seeing teams pack up and leave. I know the vultures around here have been trying to get onto anyone's beer or body armor that they're leaving behind. John Farrell, our team admin, went and got a fan from Nashville's, bones of their camp that they left over. So people are picking up those type of things. But
it's like the Hunger Games.
The one that was really interesting for me is I was down in the lobby the other night watching the final group stage games, LA Galaxy versus Houston. And there was Vancouver Whitecaps players in one little corner. There were some Montreal Impact players in another little corner. And obviously those two teams had so much at stake at that point in time. That was really fascinating to kind of be in that environment. But I'm really curious to see how Sporting deals with it. I know in talking to Peter Vermees every time, I would try and bring up the group standings in Orlando, and he would point to, no, these are Western Conference games, and that's what we're focused on. And that has been his main focus in the group stage. Now that's gone. This is complete knockouts. Doesn't count towards the regular season standings. And so training has been, I think the guys are pretty happy at being 4-1 in the league, top of the Western Conference after five games. And they've got to be pretty confident as well. They beat this Vancouver team, and you're going to have to beat good teams if you want to get it to the final here on August 11th. And I don't know about you. I'm sure you are. I'm jacked for these knockouts. There's some really good matchups.
Especially seeing how exciting the end of the group stage was. I mean, some of these games, even yesterday, the Dynamo game and LA was insane. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it now that everything's on the line. If you don't win, and I love it's going straight to PKs. No messing around. Just going to get a winner one way or the other. So makes it even better to hear Kyrie Shelton say that he's wanting to take those PKs because he might get a crack at them just depending on how these games finish out. But let's look at this Vancouver team. Like you said, Sporting beat them earlier in the season. They've kind of had their way with them historically if you look at their matchups throughout the last few seasons. But when you look at this Mark Dos Santos-led team, what, if anything, poses the biggest threat to Sporting in this game?
I think you have to give credit to Dos Santos and Vancouver for they've dealt with a lot of adversity in this tournament. I know all teams have, but the fact that they were supposed to play Dallas to start the tournament and then that gets postponed. So they're down here, I think, for 8 or 9 days before they even played a game or something like that. And they just seem to – their schedule seemed to be fluctuating so much. They didn't – they obviously gave up the lead against San Jose. Didn't look good in their other game. And most people were saying they're pretty much out and heading into that game the other day. And they get the Lightning delay, and they come out of there, and they beat Chicago. And here they are into the knockout round. So I think you give them credit for that. What would worry Sporting? I think we saw the pace of Dahomey. He's a pretty quick guy, and sometimes Sporting, you know, when they have a lot of possession and they get high up the pitch, those type of guys can really cause them problems getting in behind the back line. So I think on paper, Sporting should be the heavy favorites, but Vancouver might be feeling themselves after everyone had doubted them. They're going to play that underdog card for sure. Yeah, they've got a couple of dangerous players still.
Yeah, you can never really count out a team that scratched their way into a knockout round like the way that Vancouver has. But Carter, before we let you go, one last question. You've been asking every single one of our guests this on the Sporting KC show, so I have to ask you now, what is your favorite Disney character or movie? Either one apply.
Oh, wow. Now that I'm feeling the pressure now. It's easier when you're asking those guys, huh? I'm a Goofy guy through and through. Maybe it's because I'm a 90s kid and the Goofy movie is just an all-time legend.
So good.
So, yeah, I have to go with Goofy. You know, I love some of these Disney movies throughout the years, obviously, but I'm going to go with the OG, Goofy.
You heard it here first. That, I feel like that's now going to become some nickname that Nate pulls out at some point in one of the broadcasts. So, Carter, thank you so much for the time. We will be listening to you on a very late game coming up here on Sunday night. You can tune in and hear that on Sports Radio 810, 10 p.m. Central Time kick. That is right, 10 p.m. So set your alarms if you need to take a pregame nap, wake up, and tune into Sports Radio 810 to hear Nate, Carter, and Jacob Peterson on the call. Carter, thank you again for the time. Hope that you get a little bit of sunshine on your day off.
I appreciate it, Allie, and thanks for having me. Always a blast.
Always great stuff from Carter Augustine anytime that Sporting Kansas City is playing, but especially now during this very unusual time in sports, covering every angle of the MLS's back tournament and Sporting Kansas City's roll down in Orlando. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will hear from Sporting Kansas City manager Peter Vermes in his press conference on Friday ahead of the team's first game of the knockout round, Vancouver Whitecaps. 10 p.m. Central Time kickoff Sunday night. You can listen to that, like I said, on Sports Radio 810 WHB, as well as the post-match show with myself, Dave Borchert, and Chad Reynolds. Following that game around midnight, if you're still awake, tune in and listen to us break everything down. But next up, we will hear from manager Peter Vermes after this break right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back into Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A big thanks to our good friend Carter Augustine there in the last segment, breaking down some Sporting Kansas City stuff for us as the team gets ready for their first game of the knockout round Sunday night, 10 p.m. Central Time. Yes, 10 p.m. It'll be a late one. But now let's move over to some Peter Vermes sound. He joined the media on Friday at a press conference, and some really good stuff, as always, from manager Peter Vermes. And I want to start with a question that I had for him about the quick turnaround for his team. They played early Wednesday morning, now a game late Sunday night. And there are a few players on this team who have had significant minutes on the field up to this point in the tournament. Graham Zusi, Kyrie Shelton, just to name a few. And I asked him about the recovery and what goes into that for players and how that's progressing as they get ready for a really tough match, their first of the knockout round coming up on Sunday night. Here's what he had to say.
So far, we've been pretty fortunate because in between the games, we've had ample enough time. The other is that, you know, training and getting recovered and ready to play the next game in a setup like this is completely different than it is in Major League Soccer. You know, you don't really spend a lot of time training. You spend a lot of time kind of recovering and looking at tactics, what you'll implement in the next game. And you're trying to get your guys as fresh and recharged as much as possible for the next one. And so just like these last 2 days, they've really been, you know, yesterday was complete regen for the guys that played significant minutes. Today was a hybrid of, you would say, a regen and a training session, but it really was more weighted towards the regen side still. Tomorrow we'll try to put in some tactics for the game on Sunday.
So there's manager Peter Vermes' answer to my question about player recovery time for players like Kyrie Shelton, like Graham Zusi, who have played significant minutes so far in this tournament. And in that same vein, when we're talking about recovery time for players, and now that the team going into this knockout round is, if they keep advancing, kind of in a quick sprint to the end, if they make it all the way to the final, and our own Seren Petro had a great question for Vermes on this about how he plans to manage the roster. Is it going to be best, healthiest man available, and that's who's up and playing in that position? Or is he going to be more strategic with his roster, as we heard ahead of the Real Salt Lake game? What Vermes told us after the fact was that he knew exactly what moves were going to be made ahead of the game and throughout the game before the whistle even blew to start the match. So here's what Vermes had to say about roster management now that the team is in the knockout stage.
No, I think there has to be rotation of the roster. I really do. I think you even saw in our last game, I changed some guys out. You know, it's just accumulation of minutes, games, all that. You'll probably see the same thing in this upcoming game. Change it around again a little bit and continue to use guys in different ways and hopefully get the best out of everyone for, you know, the role that they have to play during the game.
So manager Peter Vermes will be making roster rotations. I know some critiques from fans throughout the years have been that he doesn't substitute enough, doesn't switch up the roster enough, and he is a coach who sticks to consistency. We've seen that with this team time and time again. He likes to go out with a consistent lineup with very, very few modifications to that throughout a game. But when you are in a tournament like the MLS's back tournament and the format requires you to switch things up because it's just too much. There's not enough time in between games for players to fully recover. Roster rotations are necessary, and he said that they're to be expected, which I think after what we saw on Wednesday with this team, very exciting for the future of the club. A lot of great potential with players like Felipe Hernandez, Graham Smith on the defense, and so many others, Gianluca Busio, Daniel Shallowy. So this team is in good hands. They've got the depth that they need to get through this tournament, and I think do well in it, especially in this knockout stage. It's just a matter of how Vermes strategically approaches that. It will all depend on the opponent, but like we talked about with Carter Augustine, it's hard to break into this starting lineup if you are not already a solidified starter for this club, but we'll see how that changes. And I think, you know, we've talked about the NFL preseason games being a good opportunity for rookies to get reps and to prove themselves. This tournament for Sporting Kansas City and for some of their younger players might be very similar in the approach for them, getting minutes that they might not have otherwise gotten in a normal MLS regular season. So something to watch for sure. Next up, I want to play a clip. I asked Vermes about his takeaways from this very unusual MLS season and what's impressed him about his team and how they've gone about their business in a time where it would have been easy to get down, cast yourself out. There was so much adversity that they faced, a lot of challenges that they weren't alone in, but even still, the way that his club has responded. And here's what he had to say.
Would have been very easy after the first game we played here, you know, with the way we started, and then all of a sudden, you know, they wind up winning the game late. Could have lost a tremendous amount of confidence. To find a way in the next game to keep discipline, mentally, to keep ourselves in the game and stay strong and not lose ourselves in the game, to find a way to win it, and then come into the next game and again progressing. You know, there was a period of time in that game against Salt Lake where in the first half, probably the last 20, 25 minutes of the half, they had really good possession, but they really didn't create any chances against us. And I thought our guys had adapted and adjusted within the game on how to, you know, finish out the half without really putting us in a difficult position. You know, maybe them scoring a goal, tying the game up, or who knows, maybe going up two. But we just didn't give anything up. And I think that their ability to adapt and adjust to what the game was really good. And that's without a lot of conversation from the sideline. It was something that they themselves instinctively did. And I thought they did a really good job of it. So very pleased with that. And then just the progression that they've made from game to game to game has been good as well. Sometimes you can start out as like a house on fire, and then you could start to, you know, decline over game to game. And I think that we've gotten stronger each game, and that's good in a tournament like this and also for a season as well.
So there's sporting manager Peter Vermes giving his team a lot of praise for the way that they've handled any adversity or challenges that they've faced throughout this tournament, not casting themselves out when they were down, and building on the positives from each game to put themselves in a good position now going into this knockout stage of the tournament. They're looking great first place in the Western Conference, second in scoring. Sporting definitely looking like one of the front runners going forward. A lot of upsets in this tournament, or at least surprises, with some teams, Atlanta United being one that comes to mind. Big favorite going into this tournament, and completely disappointed on every level. But Sporting Kansas City's proven time and time again that although they might not be, as Vermees said in his press conferences Friday, in the same form they were at to start off the season, they are getting better and better each game, and were able to make it out of the group stage with two big wins, one loss, but now they have a 4-1 record whenever the regular season does start back up. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by Dorian Gilmartin, the former intern of the program this summer, talking some NWSL pro women's soccer. A lot of news there and an exciting Challenge Cup final coming up this weekend. So we'll break it all down for you next, right here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joining us now on Sports Saturday is Dorian Gilmartin, the, I want to say, only on-air intern that we had this summer. And unfortunately, it was under the worst circumstances ever. I missed out on some really awesome girl power in-office moments at Sports Radio 810. But Dorian, also known as Rushmore, was on the program with Seren Petro, Jed Marshall, Curtis Siebelt. Dorian, how are you?
I am great, Allie. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to be back on the air again.
Well, as we had been tweeting back and forth about the NWSL Challenge Cup, and this is a second or third straight show that we're dedicating an entire segment to NWSL talk because women's soccer is going on. It's one of the only sports leagues back, obviously Major League Soccer as well, Major League Baseball getting things started, in addition to soccer leading the way here. But Dorian, let's just first start. I want to hear about your experience with the program and working at 810 this summer. How was Seren Petro? How was your experience with all of that?
Seren was awesome. Working at the program was sort of a dream come true. I've been a sports talk radio fan ever since I was a little kid out in New Jersey, listening to WFAN with my dad, and having the opportunity to come in and, you know, work with Seren and Curtis and Jed was absolutely incredible. You know, Jed told me one of my first homework assignments when I got the internship back in January was just listen to the show. So every single day I had 4 hours pretty much just dedicated to it, like playing in my office, playing in my apartment, in the car. And I'm still tuning in even now and kind of just tweeting back at the guys every once in a while when I hear something funny. But it was a great opportunity. I learned so much. Definitely a little bummed that you weren't in the office as much because that would have been some great times for sure. But it was a great time.
Okay. Do you have a best Seren story? I got the pleasure of getting to know Seren a lot better this year before the pandemic hit and we were in Miami for the Super Bowl and then Arizona for Royal spring training. Hilarious times, but you got to work very closely with him. What is your favorite Seren Petro memory?
Oh, some of my favorite Petro moments came after we would have our pre-show call and before he would get off that call with us and kind of do some of his own research. But we would cut some just 30-second, minute-long ads for, you know, some of the hen house stuff, Corona and everything. And his favorite opening line was just, "Don't worry, I'm going to get this in one take." And Jed and I would just kind of look at our watch and be like, "All right, who's starting the timer on this one?" He is, you know, a professional through and through, but I think some of those times where he would just mess up something and just kind of dig into himself a little and be like, "Dorian, really sorry, this usually doesn't happen." And Jed would look at me and be like, "Yeah, never, never happened."
I feel for him though, because sometimes those like recorded, just, this is a peek behind the scenes for everybody listening. Sometimes recording those on-air spots for a sponsor, it's like one paragraph, yet the hardest thing to like get out of your mouth. I don't know why that is, but I've had my fair share of choking moments. That's hilarious and not surprised at all but love those guys on the program. But now, Dorian, we're having you on to talk some women's soccer because, like I said, first team sport back and playing in the United States. It's been really exciting and I think a lot more competitive and high quality than people initially thought. But before we get into the on the field stuff, the big news of the week was that LA, Los Angeles will be getting an NWSL team. And it's backed by some of the most badass women that I could think of. I mean, actresses, Natalie Portman, Eva Longoria, Jennifer Garner, and then some very well-renowned and well-known former U.S. national team players, Abby Wambach, Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy. What was your reaction to the news and how big is this for the league?
I thought it was absolutely huge. You know, you've got all of these phenomenal former players, you know, big 99ers that were the cornerstone that also teamed up with these high profile actresses. And not only are they actresses, but they're also speaking out on their own social issues, which was awesome. You know, Natalie Portman's been big in that Time's Up movement, and she kind of had all these other women around her. And I remember, I think it was about last year when the women's national team came back and did their celebration tour that they went on and played a couple games. And I was reading through this list of women and I was like, I feel like they were all at one game together. And then as you're seeing more news come out and it wasn't breaking anymore, a couple hours later, you saw the video of, you know, Jessica Chastain and Uzo Aduba and all these women on the field. And I was like, that is the game I was thinking of. And it's just awesome to see all of these women come together and put this money into something that's like, yeah, we want these women to have contracts that they can live off of, not just contracts that are, you know, able to pay their bills here and there, but actually be able to live off these contracts and be professional women's soccer players in the US. And going out to LA, that's a huge market. And I feel like it's a market that they haven't really gotten into yet. Sure, they play, the women's national team has done their friendlies and played at the Rose Bowl, but having an actual team that's going to be able to put roots down in LA, I think is just going to be great for the league.
It's massive. And as we've seen with Major League Soccer, I mean, they have two LA teams there. California is just a breeding ground for soccer. It's like you said, it's going to be huge. And I mean, you bring up the 99 team. I personally have been a fan since that 99 team and was becoming a big soccer fan in the late 90s, early 2000s as a young female soccer player myself and had so many great people to look up to. Mia Hamm, Abby Wambach. Like, I literally wanted to be Mia Hamm. And that iconic photo of Brandi Chastain, I just idolized those women. And when you look at the progress over the last couple of decades and the popularity that professional soccer and women's soccer specifically has gained all the way up into the last year, that 2019 World Cup victory. I remember seeing so many people tweeting at me, my son's favorite athlete is Megan Rapinoe, or my son wants a Alex Morgan jersey. And obviously little girls too looking up to these women. But when that team can be looked at as more than just role models for young girls, but just young athletes as a whole, that to me is so important in shifting the perception of the sport. Like, these aren't just idols for young female soccer players. These are idols for young athletes who want to make it to the next level. And not just that, but they are vocal on issues that are bigger than soccer. They're very involved in their communities. Dorian, when you look at the shift and the progress that I've just mentioned over the last couple of decades, where are we in terms of perception, popularity, and respect for the sport of women's soccer and the national team?
I think so. And I say that because my home team is the Sky Blue FC. Unfortunately, they, you know, tried their comeback last night, but didn't get there. But, you know, they had a big push recently to get out of playing at Rutgers University. And now their home field is Red Bull Arena. And they're doing some partnership stuff with the New York Red Bulls, and that's great. And that, I think, is going to help as well. I'm not saying that these NWSL teams need their male counterparts to help out, but they're having the ability to have this, you know, large stadium to play in, to have the backing of, you know, their male counterparts. and also just sort of the nationwide push that there is for this equal pay for women. You saw it in the WNBA when they put their newest collective bargaining agreement together, where they said, we're not going to bend on this stuff. We need this. We need this money. We need these wages that are going to be okay for us. We need the actual health care as well. And I think now that you've got with this, you know, 2019 World Cup team, also they went out there for the equal pay fight as well. And that you're going to see still coming around for a couple months, if not a couple years. But I definitely think that there is a shift where we've seen this women's national team be so successful and then say, well, why are we still making X amount to this man's dollar? And why are we bringing in all of this revenue and all of these sponsors? I mean, just look at the Challenge Cup. They got Secret in there. Budweiser came out really big for them. And you're seeing all of this, again, through social media and all of these people joining behind it and saying, yeah, why aren't they able to live off this professional soccer wage? Why aren't they getting the same things? Why aren't they getting to play on the natural grass fields as opposed to, you know, sticking them on these turf fields, where the men are like, yeah, we haven't played on a turf field in ages. So I definitely think that there is some sort of shift. I, again, attribute it to kind of just society and the culture we're in right now that's shifting. And I think you're going to continue to see some really great athletes coming out and using their platform to speak on the things that they really want and need.
Yeah. And just so people can better understand, soccer in the U.S. is not a very high-paying sport. I mean, even in Major League Soccer, we're not in a conversation of millionaires against billionaires or millionaires and millionaires. It's oftentimes individuals who are making a good chunk of money, that's not to be lost here, but not anything that's, you know, generational, like wealth. Really, it's, I mean, a couple hundred thousand dollars as their salary, which, again, a lot of money, but that's Major League Soccer. In WSL, oftentimes these women don't even crack 100K in their career for an annual salary. It's the individuals like the Alex Morgans who are, you know, on the national team and have those the extra revenue coming in from sponsorships and things like that. So I think that there is a little bit of a misunderstanding when it comes to what female soccer players make, because you think of women's soccer in the U.S. and you think of the Alex Morgans, the Megan Rapinos, the Mia Hamms, and Abby Wambachs, but below them are a ton of talented women who are trying to make a living and play a sport that is important for the growth of soccer in the U.S. and nationally and internationally, but in addition to that is something that's been I think just kind of pushed off to the side for far too long. But like I said, we're seeing a huge momentum shift. Dorian, so now let's talk about the on-the-field stuff, because there's been a lot of excitement with this Challenge Cup. Like I mentioned earlier, kind of a surprise in the quality when you have so much time off to see such a competitive on-the-field product, you know, forming before your eyes. And then now as we get into the finals this weekend, what has stood out to you in this very just fun tournament?
Yeah, it's definitely been just an extremely entertaining tournament from top to bottom. When they announced the Challenge Cup, the first thing I know that popped into my mind, Allie, I don't know if it popped into yours, was how many of these internationals are actually going to play? Considering we had just heard that the Olympics were going to be postponed, I was like, who's actually going to come out and play? Who's going to be there? Who isn't going to be there? And after seeing some of the names that weren't, but then seeing names like Julie Ertz was still going to be out there, and you had Lindsey Horan, who's going to come out there and play, I was like, this is actually going to be really entertaining and high quality. Because, you know, there can sometimes be that drop off from internationals to these, you know, girls that come out in the college draft. But I think there's been a ton of really exciting things to watch. I've really, really enjoyed watching the Houston Dash. I think that they are absolutely so much fun to watch. They have always been pressing really hard forward. I think Rachel Daly has maybe become one of my favorite players, just because she kind of plays with this like absolute abandon. I mean, her second goal that she had yesterday, where she was just like, I'm going to go head first at knee level and try and put this ball in the goal on a cross. I was like, yeah, no, that's the kind of play that I really enjoyed seeing. And then you've also got some other storylines. You know, the Portland goalie, Ekstrom ended up being the third string goalie and had to come out and play in two really big do or die games. She came out and had 8 saves in her first game out. I was like, okay, yeah, you know, there's some really great talent here. On the field has been so exciting to watch.
Well, and my favorite part of, I love a good upset, and that's why the tournament style bubble approach that the NWSL and Major League Soccer have both taken has been so exciting, because you're starting to see those upsets that the favorite team going into the tournament may not necessarily be the team that's advancing or making it all the way through to the very end. North Carolina Courage being one of those teams, a huge upset early on. And then now, as you mentioned, Houston Dash breaks through and they will be taking on the Chicago Red Stars. You said you really like the Dash, but when you look at these two teams, who do you think has the edge here?
After the games that I've seen on the two of them throughout this tournament, I think this is going to be an extremely fast-paced, extremely aggressive, and extremely intense final, which if you're just the normal everyday person that's tuning into CBS on over the weekend, you're going to be like, oh, this is a fun game to watch. I really, really like Houston, but I think I might give my edge to Chicago just because of their back. I mean, they've got Julie Ertz in the back, who everybody who's ever picked up any article about the
national
team.
Like, she's dangerous.
She can definitely make those runs from the back, which I think, yes, absolutely dangerous. She can do kind of all of it. And then with Alyssa Nayer in cage, you can never, ever count against her. I was honestly surprised that she gave up those 2 goals in the second half last night. I mean, I know one of them was a Julie Ertz own goal, but still. I mean, she's pretty much a brick wall back there, and everybody knows that. I think Chicago's going to get my edge only for that reason. And they've also got Kalia Watt up front as well, who can change a game really fast. She was just continuing to play on her front foot all night yesterday, and I think that back, having Julie Ertz being able to play up through the midfield and even make runs, and then just having Kalia Watt somewhere in the box is always dangerous.
Yeah, and especially too, when you look at the experience of someone like Julie Ertz, of Alyssa Nayer, and the high level that they, you always want a team that has that veteran experience in those final championship games. There's a different, you know, you can prep as hard as you possibly can, you can game plan, but nothing can totally prepare you for the atmosphere of a final championship game. And I do think that Julie Ertz is just so solid in those games, but it's going to be a great one. Like you said, 2 very competitive teams, fast paced, physical. I'm so excited. Tomorrow, Sunday, 2:30, right? I believe
it's 2:30. Yeah.
2:30 on CBS. So if you haven't been watching, or if you have been watching and you're, you know, just trying to figure out when everything's happening with sports finally back, I feel like I'm actually having those days where I'm like, wait, what's on today? I'm like, I'm so glad to have this problem. But yes, 2:30 p.m. tomorrow on CBS, Houston Dash versus the Chicago Red Stars. It's going to be a great one. Dorian, thank you so much for the time. You'll be tweeting about the game. You've working in sports talk radio, you realize the radio side's important, but the Twitter side is also important. I know you'll be tweeting about the game. Where can people, talk with you about the game on social media?
So you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Dorian, my first name, _Cinco, C-I-N-C-O. It's a little throwback to my collegiate lacrosse playing days. So,
love it. All right. Dorian, again, thank you for the time. We will be in touch. And you can also catch her calling into the program if you miss hearing her voice there. She'll be gracing the airwaves with her presence. Thank you, Dorian, and a big thanks to our other guests on the show today, Carter Augustine, team reporter for Sporting Kansas City from the bubble down in Orlando. Always great insight from Carter, who is crushing it with his coverage of the MLS's back tournament and Sporting Kansas City. And that's going to do it for us on this edition of Sports Saturday. If you tuned in late, you want to go back and listen to some of the segments that we had today, talking Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and WSL. You can find those on our podcast page. Just go to 810whb.com, head over to the podcast tab, scroll down, and you will find additional programming. And that is where all 3 hours of the show today will be for your listening pleasure. We appreciate you listening live, catching up on the podcast, sharing out with your friends. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Allie Trost. For my co-host, Blake Schneiders, this has been another edition of Sports Saturday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And before you turn the dial, before you hop off for the day, be sure to stay tuned because coming up, we have a NASCAR pre-race show at noon, followed by the NASCAR Gander RV and Outdoor Truck Series at 12:30. Right here on Sports Radio 810. Again, I'm Allie Trost. For my co-host Blake Schneiders, this has been Sports Saturday. We'll see you right back here next weekend from 9 until noon on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Have a great, relaxing, safe, fun weekend, everybody. And we'll see you here next week. You act so different around me. Cut off a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, I'm going home.